Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our guest Providence's Ward 2 City Councilman Sam Zurier, representing College Hill and Blackstone. Thank you for joining us, Councilman.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're taping here on Thursday, and the news broke today that Rhode Island's legendary Rascal King, Buddy Cianci, has died at age 74. Cianci was certainly a very polarizing figure. His supporters saw him as a man of action who lifted Providence up. Critics point to the extent of corruption in his two tenures at City Hall in disparaging him. Sam Zurier, how will you remember Buddy Cianci?
Well, there's a story. When I was a teenager, he came, visited my father's house riding his horse. The horse left some manure on my father's front walk. My father looks at the manure. He looks at the horse. He looks at the mayor. The mayor says, that means he likes you. That's the kind of salesman that Buddy Cianci was.
Indeed. And Maureen, how about you? How will you remember Buddy Cianci?
Well, I will remember him, I think, aptly called the Rascal King. I mean, there's certain people in history, they're iconic, and there's a dark side, and there's a side that's very engaged and very productive. And I think that was the package that we got when we got Buddy Cianci. We have to remember many of the good things that he did in helping turn the city around, and that'll be part of his legacy. But he has another aspect to his legacy, his dark side, and we'll have to live with that too. But all in all, he lived life to the fullest, and in that sense, I'm happy for him.
Scott, do you see CNC's legacy as being more positive or negative ultimately?
You know, I think it'll be, as Maureen and Sam point out, a half and half. He was certainly the most charismatic politician of the last two generations here in Rhode Island. But then when he was sentenced the second time for a felony by Judge Ernie Torres, I think Judge Torres laid it out and said, you know, there is the good Mr. Cianci and then there's the bad Mr. Cianci.
Jekyll and Hyde.
The Jekyll and Hyde figure. And I think we're probably going to have to wrestle with that legacy for a long time.
Indeed. And I saw Buddy's charm on full display one of the first times I talked to him. It was not all that long after the lifting of the Plunderdome investigation, or the start of the Plunderdome investigation in 1999. Sat down for an interview, told him about the two topics I wanted to discuss. He insisted there was only one topic, pounded his desk and said, I'm the one who sets the rules here, not you, and proceeded to answer all my questions over a 90-minute interview. So moving on, there's continued uncertainty about the fiscal outlook in Providence. In October, the state auditor general called on the city to come up with a realistic plan to eliminate its more than $13 million cumulative deficit. More recently, former Hasbro CEO Alan Hassenfeld told Providence Business News that the city is in deeper trouble than anyone realizes and that bankruptcy should be considered to put Providence in better shape. Councilman Zurier, what do you make of Alan Hassenfeld's remarks?
When he was mayor, Angel Tavares said that bankruptcy should be considered the last option. He noted that in Central Falls, the bankruptcy was followed by 5 years of maximum tax increases. During Detroit's bankruptcy, there was a 30-minute wait for police calls. With that said, the city's finances are in very serious condition. The Auditor General took an unprecedented act, I believe, in sending out the letter he did 4 months ago. My understanding is that the mayor's office is preparing a response that'll be out next week for the city council to review. We have to take this very seriously. We've come very far since we left the brink of bankruptcy, and we can't go backward at this point.
Scott, when we had Mayor Olorza with us earlier this month, he pointed to a planning effort to identify some long-term budget figures as a way to stabilize the city. Do you find that a credible plan?
Yeah, I think in the long term it is, but here's what I'm surprised at, is the lack of urgency on the part of the Olorza administration about the short-term problem that the city faces. It's nice to have a 5 or 10 year plan, but as the Auditor General points out, Providence has immediate problems. I'm surprised that some even cosmetic things such as a ban on travel, a hiring freeze, some ways to save money have not already been put into effect.
And Maureen, officials like Mayor Olorza, Governor Raimondo have downplayed the idea of putting Providence into bankruptcy. Do you think that Mayor Olorza will be able to right the ship, or are the problems more severe than people recognize?
I think in the short term, when you talk about a $13 million budget deficit, I don't want to make light of it, but when you're talking about almost a $700 million annual cost budget, so to speak, I think they can deal with the short-term problems. I'm dismayed when we hear people talking whether or not we're going to extend tax stabilization to condos and things like that. And the city council president talks about raising taxes. I agree with Councilman Zurier when he said that the real concern are the long-term concerns. I mean, that's the thing that they really have. They have, there'll be a five-year plan or a 10-year plan, but those are the issues they really have to wrestle with. And I was interested and surprised when we talked about the firefighters, the councilman said that he thought you could solve this and we didn't have to switch around to do these long-term savings.
One of the things that just jumps out at me about a bankruptcy quickly is if you think GE or any big companies are coming to a bankrupt city, then you believe in the tooth fairy.
I agree.
In a meeting with reporters this week, Governor Gina Raimondo called on Rhode Islanders to be more receptive to different ways of doing things and to be less prone to what she called hometown negativity. What do you think, Maureen? Is Governor Raimondo right to suggest that Rhode Islanders are a little too negative?
I think so. I mean, I think she's had certain missteps. She's new and she's done, I think, very well in terms of beginning to make substantial changes that her predecessors, 1, 2, and 3 behind her, did not do. So I give her credit for that. Inevitably, there's missteps. And I do think we kind of pounce on those things a little too much. I mean, it's like almost in some ways sort of nitpicking. Transparency, your reporters, you care about that. But really, do you think it's worse now than it ever was? Isn't it getting better? And I wonder how long-term these kinds of criticisms are going to resonate.
Scott, as we know, there was some backlash when Governor Raimondo used the Rhode Island College Foundation to create a new position for a chief innovation officer. If Republican Governor Charlie Baker in Massachusetts did the same thing with Harvard, do you think there would be the same level of recrimination?
I'm not sure, because Charlie Baker probably would have been smart enough to go to the General Assembly up there, the Mass Legislature, and give them a better heads up than Raimondo did. I think Raimondo is less transparent, frankly, than Link Chafee was, certainly. And as you know, the First Amendment people, a lot of the press media people have said that. Now, that said, she's only been governor a year. I think we have to give her a break. And I think she is trying to turn the culture around. And we have to understand, you look at the Hassenfeld Institute poll that Joe Fleming did last week. There's a lot of skepticism here in Rhode Island still. And I think the governor needs to be out there pushing, doing some cheerleading, and being more transparent.
Last word here to Councilman Zurier. What do you think? Do you think Rhode Islanders are too negative?
Well, first of all, Providence is looking forward to the development of the I-195 parcel, and Governor Raimondo's work in terms of bringing in a big tenant property owner is very valuable, and that is a significant change for which we're grateful. I hope that she doesn't give them like a 30-year tax deal so we don't see any revenue. That's important to our future. As far as public-private partnerships, I think that that's a concept that's actually been around for a while. It can work, although the recent history is not necessarily the best. I know that when Deanna Lum was superintendent, she had an adjunct professorship at Brown, and her student got free tuition to supplement her salary while she was on the school board. And that particular model where she reported to us, she was entirely accountable to us, worked fine.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Roundtable. Scott?
Great to be here.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And Ward 2 Providence City Councilman Sam Zurier.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our website at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.